Welcome to another episode of The Storm Chamber, the only Signar podcast where all of us agree that Rogue One was utter garbage. I'm Tim Bear, and I believe that Rogue One was utter garbage.
I have my name's Mark, and I have not seen Rogue One, so I can't comment one way or another.
My name's Trevi, and I'm unfriending Tim on Facebook.
It is well deserved. I've had family members unfriend me on Facebook, so that's not surprising.
Ouch. Man, that's
cool. Tim, I like to feel that our relationship is far more intense than with any family members, so I think this should come as a pretty big development.
That's, it should hurt more.
It should hurt. Probably yeah. True.
It's amazing. I wonder how many familial relationships has Donald Trump destroyed on Facebook in 2016?
Oh wow.
Oh, gosh. All right. What are we talking about today? I don't even know. Are we doing
well?
Signar.
Signar most first and foremost.
Oh
yeah.
Questions, right? We're doing listener. This is a listener question episode, if memory serves.
It is, yeah.
Excellent. Usually, we start the episode out with a couple listener questions, but since the entire episode is going to be listener questions, maybe we should start it with something else.
That works for me.
Okay.
Let's do it. I'm in.
All right.
Mix it up.
Mark, you got anything? You got anything for us, Mark?
So I was thinking about Trevi Striker 2 list.
Trevi 2? The improved Trevi 1.
Yeah. I went epic when I was able to win a game with the Worms Weekend Invitational.
So I was thinking about a Striker 2 list, right? And how it's pretty sweet.
You can just stop right there.
It certainly was pretty sweet into a lot of things, including Wormwood. And I feel like the slight nerf to Wormwood makes Striker 2's personal threat on the tree like even better.
Okay.
But we sort of have to contend with a new player in the circle matchup, and that's our friend Una.
Okay.
So I was sort of asking myself, how do I make this list better into her? And it sort of struck me was, I think if you just take out the Forge Guard and hear me out, and you replace them with Devil Dogs, I think you get a really good Una answer in that list.
Oh my gosh.
No, you think, with their nets, like the Griffins come into you, and then your little Devil Dogs knock them down, and your guns go crazy.
It's like straight dice, right?
So, here's the issue, right? Is that the Griffins come in, and they're like, caw-caw, bitches, we're going to engage you so you can't go anywhere. And then the Devil Dogs are like, don't worry, guys, we'll knock you over. And then the Griffins will also be knocked over, but so will you, so it's just bad all around.
No, I don't think that's true.
Like at 4 AoEs.
But you've got tons of guns in that list.
I mean, is there enough guns? So, like, I think what the Griffins want to do is they want to jam the Storm Lances, right? Because if they let the Storm Lances do Storm Lance things, it's all over. But so they run up and engage the Storm Lances, and I don't know how you knock the Griffins over without knocking the Storm Lances over.
No, you probably do.
I
mean, you can knock like some of the Storm Lances over, it's okay. But if you knock too many over, it's like there's no like who even cares.
So
between the Chargers and Striker. Even right. Gibbs can help out, and Ragman, like
you yeah, probably for sure, but to take him so out. you can kill them, but you lose a unit of Storm Lances for like two turns. I don't know if you can play that many points down for that long and still be okay.
I think if you turn Rupert into Runewood,
so you can stand him up next turn.
Yeah, then you're kind of like doing a little better.
Hey, Mark. Do you know if the rules stipulate that a knockdown model loses flight?
I don't think they do.
They're still flying. Are you about to blow my mind?
I don't know. I guess like I've never bothered to look that up before.
I don't think that's a rule.
So I don't know. It would be interesting if a knockdown model lost flight. I don't know. and I brought it up, and now people are going to be listening to the show like, what are you talking about? Why would that matter?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm curious too.
Well, because if it's knocked down, then you can make melee attacks against them on their feet turn. But,
I don't think that's how that works.
Wait, what? No, because you can't target them. That's the whole thing, is you can't target them with your melee attack.
Unless they lose flight, which they don't, so.
Right.
Cool.
Anyway.
Oh, I see.
You see what I'm saying? I've never
that
bothered to look that up.
Pretty sweet. That would be an awesome change to the rules. I'd be 100% on board with that. But I don't
Striker 1 OP. Earthquake, all the things.
Yeah, you'd have like... Yeah, why you'd have a whole new host of counters.
Striker 1 all day.
Yeah.
You should actually float that by Privateer Press, see if they can incorporate that into the Scorn errata. Just say, just make this global change to flight, and then we'll all have a good time.
Yeah, it's like on the Arcadon, it just affects everything also.
Yeah. Alright, I don't see anything. I would have to dig through the rules, but I've never heard of that, but it wouldn't shock me if that was true. Alright.
It would make sense.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Anyway, Devil Dogs, I'm going to try them out. I think it's sweet. We shall see.
Excellent. Let me know how it goes. I think you're at straight dice against the birds. Their defense wouldn't matter, and it would take, what, like 3 Devil Dogs to kill a bird? So, that would be good. Yeah.
Oh, plus the knockdown one. So you'll kill like 2 with the unit if all goes well.
Well, I've played against Duna 3 times now against 3 different players. What I've discovered is that, like, if you can pull half the birds off, the list loses, like, all of its muster. Because suddenly, like, they can't flank anymore. You don't have to kill all the birds. You just have to kill enough of them that it can no longer trade with the rest of your list.
The birds are good. I'm a bit scared of the World Weirds now with her, because, like, 2 of them is really solid.
Yeah.
And that, it puts a damper on where we want our Cane Shield to go. But I still think we can play in her just fine.
I have not had a problem playing into her. So, I played Cane 2 once, and Cane 2 just shites all over. And then I played Nemo 2 or Nemo 3 into her twice, and, you know, boosted Electro Leaps kill birds, believe it or not. So, like, their defense doesn't matter when you're, like, spark noting off your own horsies and killing the birds. It's whatever. So, not that I am recommending playing Nemo 3, period, or into the birds. I'm just saying that it can be done. Yeah, that's it. Any other experience with the damn birds recently?
She's pretty bad in the High Reclaimer.
Okay.
Who isn't?
I think she's pretty bad in a Signar in general. But, because Sloane, Cane 2, like, Signar does have answers for her. Her with the Storm Raptor is interesting, because suddenly Dynamo can't do shit, which is kind of sad.
Against the Storm Raptor.
Yeah, but she's playing a Storm Raptor now.
So, Dynamo could, theoretically, and hear me out on this, he could charge the Storm Raptor and then spend his focus to make melee attacks.
The Storm Raptor does out-threat Dynamo naturally. Like, not with Haley 2, but with many other casters, the Storm Raptor threats 12. So without a solid threat extender...
14 with Una 2. Look out.
Yeah. So, anyway, enough about Una. This is not an episode about Una, but Mark, I like your tech. Anytime Sam and the Devil Dogs hit the table, a little pitter patter in my heart takes place.
They might be better with Haley 3, because you can use Ghostwalk to disengage them and then open up with your guns. That might just be better. But what are you giving
up in Haley's list? You're like giving up Trenchers or Storm Lances.
No, I think you take those as well.
Man, she is super point strapped, but I know like a lot of lists don't like to see Devil Dogs right now. So, whatever.
Dismantle is a thing. I think it's pretty cool considering it applies to all their guns too. Kind of cool into like Jack Spam.
Yeah.
Uh, anyway, or it actually it affects constructs in general, so you get to be PAL 14 weapon master guns.
Right, and it does affect other circle stuff as well, because all their wolds are constructs.
Yeah, people get queued with like the wold weirds, or even like the fulcrum,
yeah,
megalith. Like they can really put a hurt on those guys.
Yeah.
Also, the Wormwood, is Wormwood a construct? No.
No.
Yeah. No.
No, he's not. He no, should be, but he's not. That's okay.
Yeah, Karchev should be a construct, but he's not. Which is sad.
Isn't he?
Nope.
Not a construct.
What the shit?
Yeah, isn't that wonky?
Well, he has, his rule says that if you have a damage effect that changes how you damage Warjacks, it affects him, right?
It does, but...
Oh, does it change how you apply... It might just be apply damage, so sniper works. All right, it's don't like, listen to me. I don't know anything. Why am I here?
Yeah, the effects modifying the amount of damage to, or the manner in which damage is applied to a Warjack also apply to him. But you could perhaps feasibly... Because the Warjacks now have the construct rule on their card...
Okay.
It's like, you could feasibly have a Warjack who's not a construct, is what I'm saying.
Ooh.
So, Karchev is not a construct. Come on, PP, get it together.
Yeah. Come on, Hungerford. What the hell is going on over there?
That's kind of funny, though. So Dismantle does not work against Karchev. I definitely thought it did.
Nope. But it is sad. But he doesn't like being knocked down either. So, whatevers. You can knock him down.
But I really thought
then,
those
like, shoot
slug guns were
going to
be
still.
Weapon masters against him, and now they aren't.
Well, I mean, he doesn't like being knocked down because he has unyielding. So,
oh, that too, for sure.
You know, so they're like not terrible into him. So, anyway, enough about that. I think that is interesting. I'll have to give it a shot. All right. So a couple weeks ago, we asked for like listener questions, and I was pretty surprised that we got like more than five. Were you guys surprised?
I didn't know people listened to this podcast.
I've been monitoring our downloads, which are
actually
pretty good.
Are all these questions from Tim? Did Tim write these?
No, I didn't write any of them.
Okay. Sure.
I didn't. Would I ask a question about Nemo 3? Would I do that?
Yeah.
No,
you wanna,
I wouldn't.
You want to harp on about how garbage he is.
Yeah, he's garbage.
I want to tell you how much you're wrong.
We will talk about that in 2 weeks.
He's very much not garbage.
He is very much terrible. All right.
I'm not going to deny that.
All right. So let us... We got a lot of questions about Nemo 3. We're going to leave those questions for the next episode. Is that fair, Trevi?
Get the fuck out of here, Nemo 3.
Oh my gosh. That's what I say every time I pull him out of my bag. All right. So let's why don't we do like a round robin style? Trevi, pick a question.
Okie dokie. Let's start with this one. Mr. Adam Pricer asks or states, would love to hear about trencher tactics. Smoke wall, etc.
Okay.
Gentlemen, take it away.
Mark, you certainly have more experience with trenchers than I do, so I'll let you handle this one.
I loved trenchers in Mark II, not just with Haley 3, and they're even better now. So, I mean, they're just like this really sweet spot between a unit that's like kind of hard to remove at range, like on the approach, that blankets like the rest of your army. I think they're quite solid with Kane 2, even though my opinion of him has gone down a bit recently. I've had a lot of good success with him. obviously, with Haley 3, like I don't think you can play her without them, really. Although, Def 12 Colossals is kind of interesting. Anyway, you definitely don't want to leave home without them if you're taking her. There is Jarla's list with Haley 3 that takes the Grenadiers, which of course they sort of enable as well.
Mm-hmm.
So beyond that, I have had some success also with trenchers in Kara Sloan, where you take like the weapon crews and you take Grenadiers with her. Again, it's pretty solid.
Do you think do you think there's any value in the cannon or any value in the chain gun?
Well, this was the chain gun with Kara Sloan.
Okay.
Because you get two grunts plus the gun. So you use like the grunts to enable like say two of your grenadiers.
Sure. Yeah.
The issue is that they eventually die. Your opponent realizes that they can like cut your offensive output by a lot by killing two ARM 13, DEF 13 guys.
No.
So that's a bit of an issue, but that's where I see a spot for the chain gun. The cannon, I expect to maybe see a spot for them, you know, like in a theme list soon.
What about the cannon with like fire for effect on it in a Kane 2 list? Like how legit's that? Like a fully boosted PAL 13 that's going to get like 4d6 on damage.
If it wasn't AoE 3, I'd be a little more interested. I guess being able to go, 4 inches? Shoot 13?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just like really, really low threat range to put like a 3 cost upkeep on someone.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's 6 points.
I don't know about that guy. Like, I want to like that idea, but like, give me range 60 and I'll think about it.
So do you think
I know Trevi has one area where he likes trenchers.
Do you think just the base unit, or do you want, like, I feel like the base unit and the command attachment, do you want the weapon attachments with it too, or are you just taking the base unit and the command attachment?
Oh, the rifle grenadiers are hard to justify, I think.
Okay.
Like, you're already, like, already, just, even the command attachment is pricey. Like, I think you, like, they're not bad. I think you've definitely got some lists where they might weren't being taken.
Okay.
Like, being able to lay a cloud wall in front of the rest of your army while they go jam and, like, do stuff, I guess is kind of cool, but man, it just gets too expensive after that, I think. We don't have, like, this like, catch-all upkeep that turns them into a Death Star. Like, if we had access to, like, Defender's Ward, I could see it. Like, making them 15-15 would be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But when you're going, okay.
Yeah, and their stats are not really good enough to put any of our buffs on. Maybe Blur, but yeah, maybe not. Yeah,
Blur's good.
Yeah. But
I know Trevi likes them in another list, perhaps. I don't know if he's played it.
Are we talking about Striker 3?
We are now.
Yeah, I haven't played it. I only own one unit of trenchers. And I don't even own any command attachments. So, unfortunately, my experience with trenchers has been resultingly limited. But right. I was toying with the idea of playing him with Striker 3 with two full units with their command attachments and all the fixins, Maxwell Finn in there too, and potentially even some trench busters. What? Ooh. And a battle group with a bunch of guns. The idea basically being that they trade shots really well with other crappy infantry.
Okay.
They win the crappy infantry fight because they go to Mat 7 with Maxwell Finn in there, and then like their defense 17 against guns with CRA, and they'll shoot all the dudes, and then Striker can bring some like defenders or something and shoot more stuff, and you just have a bunch of shooting. So they're relatively limited threat range isn't as much of a deal if you have a bunch of guns. And then like Striker 3 is the patron saint of turning whatever into like amazing powerhouses. So your little POW 9 trenchers become POW 14 weapon masters when they need to be, and they kill the world.
It's not bad.
I don't hate that.
No. It doesn't sound awful, but Striker 3 does. All right.
Does he though?
We'll get there, okay?
Field Marshal Assault.
I like this question from Tyler Ralston. Does Signar suffer more from support bloat than other factions? How do you build lists to avoid it? You want to take this one, Trevor?
I don't necessarily think that Signar suffers more from support bloat. I think that potentially from Mark II, it might have been sort of a carryover because we used to sort of crutch on a lot of solos, and those solos don't really fit in lists anymore. But I think at this point, really the only like support I'm taking in my list is Junior, and he brings a Warjack anyway. So you bring a Warjack that's going to be useful to your list. So that's not really dead points. And then Ragman and probably the Squire are those guys.
And Arlen Strangeways, yeah. Probably.
Yeah, sometimes I include him less in my list than I did when the edition started, but I'm playing a lot less, big heavy battle groups and a little bit more sort of combined arms. So he's in there potentially if I need him. But a lot of our stuff pulls double duty. Like you could consider a gun mage captain add up to be support because he's a defense debuff. But he's also, he kills dudes just fine.
Right. Like Catherine Lattermore is kind of a mix. And like,
right. She's in there too. So a lot of that stuff you bring in as you need it. So there's only, maybe 20 points that I bring in just about every list that, that it could really be classified as support.
It
and
feels
most factions end up doing that.
Yeah. And it feels like it's less now than it was in Mark II. Like in Mark II, I felt like Signar brought 10 to 15 points in support every game. Like you're bringing Ayana, I wouldn't count Holt, but Ayana and the Squire, and you're bringing maybe like the Stormblade captain, and you're bringing Rupert. Like you're bringing all these bits and pieces to make your army work. And it feels like in Mark III, there are more solos that pull double duty better than they did in Mark II. So it feels like we need less support. With that said, it feels like Signar is in a really healthy spot with solos. So all of our solos, Arlen Strangeways and Lady K and Runewood and all of these character solos are doing more than just like giving tough like Rupert Wood or whatever.
Yeah, they're doing a ton of work.
Yeah, and it feels like Signar's solos are probably better than other factions' solos. We're certainly ahead of the curve, but as far as units go, we're like well behind the curve. Like we have Storm Lances and Trenchers, and we talked about that last week. So really our strength is in our casters, and it's in our solos, it feels like, in Mark III. So I wouldn't be scared of including quote-unquote support as long as that support is going to contribute gunshots and electroleaps and, that sort of stuff.
To address that quickly, though, I do think we probably end up playing more support than the average Menoth list does now.
Probably.
Which I think is a bit of a... I think that's a bit of a reversal from Mark II. Like, you used to see Vassals and Choir and, I mean, mostly those, but that was like... And like a Covenant and that sort of stuff. I'm seeing Menoth list, just as an example, put a lot more beef on the table. And yeah, they're probably playing less support than Signar. Just thinking about it, but I think that's sort of like skewed by the fact that we sort of take Junior almost every time. Like that's already going to be like Junior costs as much as the Choir, and in some ways his Jack that you have to take is not participating perhaps as much as another 8 points could, or 9, I guess, if you want to get crazy and take a charger.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I would definitely say perhaps like relative to other factions in Mark III, I may be seeing what this question is asking. But like the thing is, so I think what you need to do is take advantage of that Jack Junior has, so it doesn't feel like just more support. It's just like, here's this other model that adds a lot to your army, like either a charger or, this Firefly helps enable, these Storm Lances or Dynamo or both or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's probably fair. It feels like because of the way the Firefly works now, and probably the increased efficiency of the Charger and Warjacks in general, that like Junior is pulling double duty, whereas in Mark II, Junior was just a 3-point Arcane Shield tax. But now you're getting Arcane Shield and you're getting like this functional Jack. So anyway.
Yeah. You can take a Hunter to get more use out of him too, because it gets to actually be far from him and still do things.
Sure. Yep. All right. Mark, you want to pick us a question?
I do. A pairing without a Haley, possible? Question mark. Desirable? Question mark. From Simon Robinson. I think that's a really good question. I think with the transition, you know, to the post-errata world we live in, I think that question is going to be asked more. I've had a few, you know, I've heard a couple different opinions, like, oh, you know, Haley 3 is not our best caster. I've heard that one a couple places. And also I've heard other people tell me Striker 2 is now our best caster.
I think you told me that one, Mark.
Yeah. I said that one. I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one who said that. I did say that. But so, like, I think, like, for example, throwing it out there, Striker 2 Kara Sloan pair is probably fine, probably powerful. You're going to have to get used to playing quote-unquote fair in the sense that you don't get around where your opponent does nothing in melee, or very little. You don't get that anymore if you play without Haley 2, for example. Okay. You sort of don't get that if you play without Haley 3, because the Cloud Wall, in some ways, is a bit like Haley 2's feat, because you just say, like, well, if you don't have a good way to ignore clouds, pretty much can't do anything to me this turn. And that's at least true on the approach. So, like, you have to change your way of thinking, because Tim was saying, a lot of our units are pricey and perhaps not as good as they could be. We often lean on, like, a feat that, like, protects our really expensive models or, like, you know, doubles the offensive output of our army to try and, like, push or tip the scales in our favor. And like Striker 2 can kind of do that with his feet. But it's you definitely have to change your way of thinking, your way of playing Signar when you just can't rely on, like, really strong defensive tech.
I think, you know, because we play Signar and I think we still have problems cracking armor like we did in Mark 2, although it feels like there's less of it. There's less multi-wound infantry and stuff on the table like there was in Mark 2. I think if you want to make a pairing without a Haley, you've got to go, all right, well, let me start and make, like, an armor-cracking list. What's going to be my armor cracker? And then you got to find something that's going to complement that well. Like, I could see a lot of possibilities. Like, are you going to play at the upper echelons of play without a Haley? I don't know, but I feel like, you know, you might be able to take, you know, like, Kara Sloan and Darius, or you might be able to find some sort of pairing with two other casters, you know, like a A-minus caster and a B-plus caster that does very well. Like, any of the strikers and anything that shoots feels pretty good. Like, if you were to take Striker 1 or Striker 2 and Kara Sloan, or I'll have to see where Kane 2 kind of sits after the errata. But, like, Striker 2, Kane 2 doesn't feel absurdly bad to me, assuming he hasn't been hit too hard after the errata.
I think to try and answer the second part of Simon's question, which is, you know, is playing this pairing without Haley desirable? One advantage you're going to have if you forsake all of the Haleys is, you know, your opponents won't know what the hell they're playing against, just because of how popular Haley 2 and Haley 3 are. Haley 1 was once popular, but we don't talk about that anymore. but, like, I think if you, yeah, like, there's definitely a bit of, like, a dark horse factor going on if you decide not to play Haley 2 or Haley 3, because there are some players who take both of them as their pair, and, like, that's a really strong pair. Like, I've definitely done it. So you've definitely got that going for you as far as desirability goes. But again, you are depriving yourself of some very strong defensive tech when you do that. So, like, I think you have to shift how you're going to play.
Yeah.
Signar, if you're not taking either of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trevor, it's your turn to pick a question.
Tim Bauman asks, what casters in Signar do you believe to be tournament viable? I.e., what casters can you take to a top level event and win with?
Maybe we should just answer this. What casters are not viable?
Well, that would be too long. Top five casters in Signar, go.
Is that what we want to do?
I mean, that's basically the question, right?
I
what casters can you take to a top level? I mean, I guess the question is can, and that the answer to that is like basically all of them. Like, don't take Constance Blaze, or maybe Haley one now, or
like Cray.
You're probably even Sturgis.
Cray is not that bad.
Maddox.
Maddox also not that bad. You can win with. She's not good, but she's not. She's like just got some spells. If the question was what casters would you take to a top level event and also win with, how would you answer that?
Tim, go.
Mark, go.
Why do we let this guy on here?
Okay, look, if I was going, like, I'm going to a big event, a three commanders event, it's a team event, I can't let my team down, right? So there's no possibility of me, like, wanting a dark horse with Sturgis, because that's going to let my team down if I try to do that, right? So what casters am I looking at? Well, until the errata, I was looking Haley 2, Kane 2, but I think that the short list is probably, like, Haley 2, Haley 3, Striker 2... Striker 1, Kara Sloan, Darius. That's my top six. And some of those, I think, are like B-level casters that just pair really well with A-plus level casters. One thing I love about Darius is, like, I can look at a pair and I can go, Darius can play into both of those casters that my opponents put forth. I can play Darius this round, and I'm going to get a free round and win. That's one thing that I love about him. But I think he's probably just a B or a B minus caster that sits well in a pairing. And a hush fell over the crowd. Trevor?
We're awed by your answer.
Okay. Is that shocking? Like, what did I say that was shocking?
I don't know. Just the sound melodic tones of your voice.
Oh.
I think you're mostly hit the nail on the head, for the most part. Some.
Is there some anybody Haley else 2, that you want to include in that list? Did I miss somebody?
I don't think so. I think you got it.
I think Jake's 2 at least merits some talking about, at least real quick.
Is she that good though? She's good, but she's not like mind-blowingly amazing.
I've not played a ton of Jake, so I cannot contribute to that. Mark, you think she's there? Like, positive charge and escort are enough.
If there's one I would at least ask to think about maybe a bit more is Nemo 1. Any caster with D-cell is, like, going to be worth talking about.
Okay. Well, we will have to play us some Nemo 1 in the future, I suppose.
And, like, a damage buff, and his Jax can be allocated for focus, and he's, like, personally 10 focus.
Yeah.
And being able to disrupt your opponent's entire battle group is kind of cool.
It's much better now than it was 7 months ago.
Oh, you mean when before people played 10 Jack armies?
Right, exactly. It was much better than in Mark 2. So
yeah, I think you've got like seven or eight casters you could really think about in your tournament pair. I'd probably leave Nemo 2 behind Constance Blaze, Sturgis, Kane 1. Like, I've had fun with him before in tournaments, but, like, I just don't think the meta works with him anymore.
Yeah, I would agree.
He shits all over Lilith 3, though.
If you like. Well, that's true.
He's great at that.
All right.
That's
So we got essentially seven casters. That's Haley 2, Haley 3, Striker 1, Striker 2, Kara Sloan, Darius, Nemo 1, and Jakes. That's 8. Does that sound about right? Yes.
I think Trevor thinks I'm being too generous.
Sounds good.
It sounds like we're being a little generous with a couple of those. But yeah, I mean, I could see like in a pair that could feasibly work.
I think honestly, like the meta's organic and, you know, a couple months down the line, different things are very strong at that point, and any of those casters could absolutely become casters that you would see in a competitive pairing. to counter powerfulist.
Yeah, sure. All right, Mark. Is it Mark's turn to get a question, or is it my turn to get a question? I don't remember.
Mark, go.
Okay, I'll go.
You're up.
What changes would you make to Stryker 3 to make him viable?
Ooh.
I think first and foremost, you need to give him back Field Marshal Assault.
Yeah, that was that was such a core part of his kit that really,
yeah,
like, really changed the game for him.
Yeah.
But what sometimes Jack really loved that? Jack. Like, what Jack do we have that's clamoring for Assault?
None of them, Tim. None of our War Jacks. That's
The Stormclad has it naturally. The Avengers going to knock itself down. The Reliant? Like, you want to give the Reliant or the Defender? Like, the Defender's kind of cute with it, but that's about it.
It's like long-range guns that hit really hard kind of liked it, because you could, like Hunters were really funny with him, because you could, like, start on the AD line, just assault forward, and you'd get crazy threat ranges, but
so expensive. Focus.
Yeah, they're expensive. Defenders were the star, I think, because you could just spend the extra focus and get like plus 3 inches of range on the gun, basically, and that was a big deal.
Do you feel like that is it? That, like, having assault again, like, I just don't see it. And
no. I'm just fucking messing with you, man.
Oh my god, what else? What else does he need?
I think he's mostly okay. As he's not great, but he's not. I don't think he's unviable. I think he needs better infantry.
I'd like to see one extra armor.
Yeah, maybe D-cell. That's a good spell, right? That makes casters good.
D-cell would be good.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, there goes any reason to play Stryker 2.
Stryker 3 threats like way farther. What and late game's like harder. And gives an accuracy buff that's better.
No, I know.
What if he could sack pawn to Warjacks? Sack pawn to Warjacks.
But I think, like, let's just, like, if we want to start, let's have your defensive stats not be strictly worse when you get up on a horse. Let's start with that.
Right, that was baffling. Well, it's because Nemo took his sweet armor that had overload and plus one strength and plus one armor on it. He took it away. I mean, so Nemo 4 is wearing some sweet ass armor.
All right.
Just give
him. You heard it here first, folks. Nemo 4 has overload.
Just give him something else. Like, you could have, like, escort for mobility, actually, I think would be pretty sweet.
That would be better.
Like, it would suck to have to recast it, but having Pathfinder on your Jax in Signar actually makes him, like, kind of like unique at that point.
Yeah.
And worth playing, I think. Like, also plus 2 speed is sweet because it helps you, like, get them up the field further and faster.
Okay.
But I think just having mobility instead of escort would be like, or battle host or whatever it's called now. A battle host is the horde's version of escort.
Just
give him mobility so that he can at least bring something unique to the table. I think already you're looking at a much more interesting caster.
Okay.
But he's probably even more focus strapped.
All right. How about this? How about you give Stryker 3 10 boxes, and when he dies, you put Stryker 2 on the table? How's that?
Fair and balanced. I'm in.
You drive a hard bargain, Tim.
All right. I like this question because this brings out the inner sus in me. This is from Tim Obermark. Can you name some general caster pairings? But I like the second question more. I like to play a lot of B-level casters, but I don't know them well enough to find out their shortcomings. Basically, if taking X, then take Y. Tim, let me talk to you. Man to man, sus to sus, okay?
Tim to Tim.
Tim to Tim.
Damn it, Mark.
All right? I like to play B-level casters as well. However, you need to realize that it's very difficult to win with Sturgis in your pairing. I did write a blog post for the War Machine and Hordes for Beginners page. You can find that somewhere via the Google or something. I think I named it Play Like You've Got a Pair of Casters. I think if you want to play, like if you want to Dark Horse, you need to have your second list be very strong. Do not pair like Connie with Sturgis, because that would be bad. But let's say you want to play Nemo 3 or you want to play Sturgis. Go in and have your other list be Haley 2 or Haley 3 and try to make your pair as strong as possible. And go into a tournament realizing that you're not going to play Nemo 3 or Sturgis every round and try to play Haley as much as you can. That way you can, like, play your janky B-level caster, but then also not lose every fucking round as well. That's my advice to you.
Well, you can aim for, like, 50-50, right? Like, if you're in a four-round tournament, for example.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, you can... Because, like, there are matchups where... your, like, off-hand caster might be more interesting. Just a thought.
It depends who that caster is. Like, it sure as hell isn't going to be Sturgis. But, like, maybe if your off-hand caster is, like, Nemo 3, and you know, like, exactly what you want to play that into, and you see opportunities to play it, sure, you could play that twice. I'm not saying to do that, but, yeah, you... probably could.
Perfect. Well, I'm excited to talk about Nemo 3. I have had some interesting success with the guy.
Okay.
But we don't have to do that.
Any other advice for playing B-level casters?
Yeah, I think, generally speaking, what you want to do is one list you bring. This is mostly how I build pairings. Is like one list I bring that just, like, it's a good list, generally speaking. And every time I build a good list and I look at this list, I'm like, I love this list. It's going to be great. And then I think about playing it against Carcelone. And I'm like, this list is going to die to Carcelone.
Sure.
So my second list kills all of the Carcelones of the world. So normally what I'll do is I'll bring like Haley 2 or something that really fights melee super hard. And then the other list is also Carcelone because my Carcelone's better. So I'm going to win. Alternatively, you could do Striker 1. That's one of the reasons Striker 1 is so amazing. Darius, also great. Nemo 1, probably fine because he has decel and brings lots of armor. So anybody who can fight gun lines, you pair with your sort of squishier caster. So that's just sort of general pairing advice is usually how I go about things.
Avoid redundancy. Like, don't make your list definitely super similar.
I made that mistake. I went into at War Machine Weekend, I went into the Iron Gauntlet with basically no anti-gun lines. I just wanted to play lists that were fun, and turns out lists that are fun get shot really easily. So I had Haley 2, I had Striker 2, who's like okay, but not great, and I had Jakes 2, who is pretty squishy, and round 1 hit a gun line, lost.
That happens.
Basically nothing I could do. So don't build lists that are basically all the same thing.
All right, Trevor, pick us a question.
Haley 3 is so amazing. Why do we have to talk about Striker 1 all the time? Says Barney the Dinosaur Beck.
Oh my gosh, he's never listening again.
Oh, that's fine. Plenty where you came from, Mr. Barney.
Oh my
Barnabas
goodness.
Beck.
Our
other three listeners will take your place.
Mark, you want to answer this one?
Well, I mean, it's a very good question, because one of the reasons I love talking about Striker 1 is because of how sweet he is into Rhett. But Haley 3 is also very good into Rhett. And with Ossian seeing a bit of a downgrade, she's definitely an interesting counter as well.
Okay.
And like, for this, as an example, like Dominate is hilarious on like Disco or Imperatus, because that's a thing now. But honestly, I think I expect to see a lot of Ossian players go back to Assyria. And the sad thing is that Haley 3 is actually kind of worse than Assyria, because she can have her whole army see through your cloud wall for a turn, and that kind of hurts.
Yeah.
But that said, Haley 3 is amazing. She's really good into War Machine for that reason, but she's also really good into Una with like the cloud denial tech. And I know I hear a lot of players tell me they think she's the best caster in Signar.
She's got a deep toolbox that synergizes well.
She can do a lot of things on a given turn. You have to be sort of like, the challenge is picking like which one of those things you want to like do well.
Yeah.
And what else you decide to compromise on. And it's also a caster that has like some surprising mobility with like reposition. Yeah, no, I think they're really, really sweet. And like being able to see through your own clouds is a nice little like activation or order of activation solving your solver.
Now. Sure.
That you can just decide, oh, like I'll see through my trenchers, it's fine. And I'll cycle tactical supremacy and get like, a lot of use out of it. I kind of think Striker 1 is going to perhaps overshadow her if you're looking to answer Rent. If you're looking to answer also Circle and things like that, I think Striker versus Una, that's a game I want to try. I don't know if, how that goes, to be honest.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem super bad.
It does seem okay.
If you have a Starwall, you can like potentially laser target Earthquakes and then free up your dudes to shoot all the knockdown griffins and kill them.
Yep.
And that's the turn that they're invincible. Boom.
Yep.
Yeah, buddy.
Actually, yeah, he seems fine into Una. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I feel
Striker
like...
Striker 1.
I guess we talk about Striker 1 all the time because, like, everybody knows Haley 3 is amazing, and throughout much of Mark 2, people shadow on Striker 1. But he feels like he is strong into the meta that we're seeing. So, like, his name keeps popping up because we're like, we need a solution. And you know what, like, Striker 1 has is, like, a lot of super, super basic problem-solving spells and a problem-solving feat. Like, nothing is complex. There's no complex synergy there. It's just like, bam, my feet, you can't kill my stuff. You know, or I put Snipe on the storm wall, and if Wyrmwood doesn't feat, you kill his warp wolves. You know, like, it's just, he just has simple solutions. Whatever. Mark, pick us a question.
Oh, okay, sure. I like this one. From Daniel Espling. Which are the natively good and bad matchups, in terms of factions, for Signar, and why? Take us away, Tim.
Natively good and bad? I mean, well, we've talked, I guess, if we were to go through, like, all of the different factions, like Menoth, I think Ammon is probably a problem. Not that we can't build for it, but I think that he brings so much armor and so many jacks that if you aren't prepared for it, you're going to have a bad, bad day. Signar can prepare for it, but if you don't know what to do, it's going to be a long afternoon for you. I think Convergence continues to be a problem with Lucant. Striker 2 is, again, an easy solution into Lucant. But if you bring, like, Kara Sloan and, in some situations, Haley, or in other situations, like, you don't have a solid armor cracker, that's a problem. Retribution, it'll be interesting to see, like, where they fall. I don't think Ossian is going to fall as far as Retribution players feel like he's going to fall. But I think he's going to fall out of the meta a little bit. Still, I don't want to see, like, the Helena-Ossian pairing, because that's a pieceless chicken that I dislike. Circle, I feel, is overrated. Minions is confusing to me still. I don't... If I saw a Minions pair, I would not know what to drop into it. I don't feel like there's a very straightforward solution that we have. That's kind of long and short of it, I think.
How do you feel, Trevi?
Yes.
What? You gotta give us more than that.
What are we talking about?
Good and bad matchups in terms of factions.
I had a whole thing prepared. Yeah, Rhett sucks. It's awful. Kador, awesome. Keep coming, Kador.
Yep, most bring part. It.
Not Karchev anymore. Well, Karchev's fine now. That's fine.
Yep.
And I don't know, Protectorate's like a 50-50 against everything. And everything else is kind of mediocre. Circle seems not great, but just in general. Okay. It's mostly because you can't shoot at them very much. But other than that, everything else is pretty even. Maybe Kricks we kill like super hard, but that was always true and now is even more true.
Yep. Mark, do you have any input on this one?
I think Menoth got a little bit tougher for us because of the changed time bomb. Like, I have relied on that so much in the past. I think Durst becomes, like, markedly more difficult for us to handle. And I think Eye of Truth or whatever he is, like, the rumor I've heard is he's, like, a 20-plus point warjack with a shield that gives blessed to, like, friendlies within five. And yeah. As someone who... he's a jack who just gives off blessed. And I'm like, that's a big problem. If he does so for guns as well, and they just see through your arcane shield all day.
That seems like, bad.
That's rough for us. So, like, I think he'll play super well with Durst. Like, you add in, like, D-Cell and Boundless Charge and, like, a whole battle group that you can't cast spells at. And with a feat that is kind of like a time walk. You're looking at a pretty somewhat of an uphill battle. Maybe it probably will still be fine, but I think the Menoth matchup got a little bit harder for us. Beyond that, I think Trevi kind of hit the nail on the head for Kador and Kricks. I think Rhett, just let's see how your Assyria game is now. So I think you're going to see a lot more of her than you did before. You are probably already seeing a lot of her. Mercs will still be rough. Like, there's like Mercs are like stealthily becoming the faction I'm like most afraid of seeing on the table. Because they just have so many different ways they can come at you, and like, oh, here's like Gun Bunny spam, or you know, Cephalix, or like, here's Bart, or here's Shay with like 8 freebooters or whatever. There's just all this weird crap they can manage, and like, it's really hard to have an answer to all of it.
Yeah.
We'll see how Scorn is, but if them just getting the old Kriya Animus back already fills me with a bit of dread, because they got so much Shield Guard in the list now. You couple that with like +2/+2 on everything, and it's getting kind of scary.
That's sad.
Also with Zadesh, who's a caster you just can't assassinate at range. So yeah, I think we're naturally strong into like trolls. Legion's always a bit tricky. Minions definitely better now that they can't throw the snake 30 inches at you or whatever.
Yeah, that is significantly improved.
Rask is still an issue that you almost need a control feat to answer.
Or a denial feat. But
sure, yeah. But even like Striker 1's feat, it'll save your Stormwall, it won't save much else. Against like a rage, furied, whatever the hell.
That's fair.
That out-threats you is the big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to ask two questions.
Okay.
The first question is...
Cheater.
From John Evans Anderson, with Darius's strong tank game, is there any merit in a strong range game? With Refuge, a model like Thunderhead can be much more survivable. Same with Dynamo, although I agree his accuracy is a problem. So, can Darius play a range game? No. Second question.
You're wrong.
Nope.
It's
right.
It's awesome.
Why don't... Okay, tell me why it's awesome. Go ahead.
Because he puts Refuge on a model like perhaps Thunderhead or Dynamo. And then they refuge around. It's like exactly like he said. So Dynamo's problem, right, is that he's like range 10. So he gets up and he shoots. He's like, I'm going to shoot the piss out of you. Except that most things threat like 10-ish inches. So if he doesn't kill you, he's super dead. But Refuge makes it better, so he just runs away. And if you're building the list to do that, you build accuracy fixers into the list, usually Gun Mage Captain Adepts. And then... Darius like spends the first couple turns swapping refuge around where he needs it, and he plays sort of a standoffish game. He controls stuff with Centurion by putting Centurions in front of him, and then later on he like does his crazy refuge threat range things like that. But for the first like turn two, turn three, it's really legit.
Okay,
I did it with Thunderhead. I a lot of times I'll have like a model with like just an incidental range attack, usually like a Stormclad. And they'll get refuge so they can they can just contribute at ranged with the their gunshot thing. But it, the ranged game is strong. I wouldn't go like full retard gun line, but I would do just like one or two models that are good with it.
Okay. All right. I disagree, but okay. Maybe
you also
maybe
think Rogue One is bad, so we know how much to value your opinions.
I was I was just going to answer that with no, so I picked a second question. But
I think just to butt in for a sec, I think our friend the Hurricane might help enable Darius's range game a bit more if he goes and like, oh, like you're knocked down. Now Dynamo doesn't care about accuracy.
Like, yeah.
That's
I think
true.
The Hurricane and like, yeah, I think that enables a lot of the assassin or the ranged game in general a lot more with him, because you can basically just take the list you used to take with him. Hurricane goes where the Stormwall was, Firefly goes where the Sentinel was, and Dynamo replaces one of your Centurions, and you're just like, all right, let's, you know, let's make some magic happen.
Okay, you just think Refuge is that strong?
Well, it is when you basically hit on not double ones. I think.
Okay. That's
like it's not that good if you need like sixes. I agree, definitely. But
all right,
you just don't need double ones.
I mean, I don't. It's hard to argue with anything but double ones. You get four shots. Like I had Dynamo and Thorn in a Striker One list this week. Like because a snipe Dynamo and Thorn and Earthquake is kind of like pretty awesome. Which I guess is about the same thing. Moving backward or just staying back is about one and the same. So, why don't we all go through and pick one more question? How's that?
Sure,
sounds good.
Trevi, get us a question.
All right, how about Matthew West asks, how to keep Ragman alive?
Oh, that's a great question.
How to, Tim?
That is a good question.
What was that?
How to?
Try to keep him back. Keep him around either like really cheap infantry or like hardy infantry with Arcane Shield, like Storm Lances with Arcane Shield, or he can like buddy up with Catherine Lattermore too. Usually he really only needs to be protected on turn two from gunshots. Turn three, you can probably commit him. And then you might lose him after that, but it won't be to gunshots. It'll be to melee attacks.
Play Rorschenbrine, and then sack pawn to Brine, and then he gets free charges.
That's kind of cute. Sure. if you're playing Rorschenbrine, I don't know who is. At a Kane 2 list with Rorschenbrine in them. But yeah, okay.
Haley 2, all the throws.
Sure.
I think the real answer is you play Harrison Gibbs. And you keep Ragman like back by your caster, and then your caster gets like a free spell that's range 12 and is minus 2 armor to like a bunch of enemies.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. It's his threat is monumentally far with Harrison Gibbs. He can affect a friendly model 12 inches away from his current position. So it can affect up to 16 inches away if you have a large base with a 2-inch melee range.
Sure.
So it's like forever. And then that distance, you can also help him out a little bit with like blocking line of sight and clouds and stuff like that. Just keep him back. I think a lot of people get really excited about Ragman. They're like, oh, I'm going to get him up there and I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. But then he dies and he doesn't do anything. And they don't really think about how far the threat range on Deathfield actually is, especially if you plan ahead with awesome pre-measuring action. You put a model like, you know, you place models perfectly so that he can get death field on whatever he needs to. If you have ancillary models like with 2-inch melee range, like Thorn or like random solos with reach or something like that, they can just run and Ragman can get his shtick going. But mostly you just keep him back.
Okay.
There's you can also like one of, I think, the key matchups where it can be difficult to keep any solo alive is like Wyrmwood, right? Or at least that was so in the previously. And you basically have to watch out. You have to watch out for like his two big spells, right? Hellmouth and Stranglehold. So Hellmouth was just an exercise in keeping everything more than 3 inches away from him. And Stranglehold is often an exercise in just keeping line of sight blocked to him or keeping him more than 22 inches away from Cassius. But I think that kind of goes for like anyone with arc nodes. You just like, you know, you look, okay, well, you know, your arc node can run 12. Range on the spell is 10, 8, or whatever. Compute that distance, keep him that far back in a lot of matchups, or block line of sight with like crappy infantry models or jacks or even your caster.
Or trenchers.
If it's a spell. If range of attacks are the only thing that are going to threaten him, then obviously you can just rely on sack pawn. But I find keeping those two things in mind like is usually enough. Like I can't remember the last time I lost him, you know, before like turn like 4. I can't think of the last time.
Yeah. And
he doesn't.
You don't need him every match either. Like, so be wary of where you commit him. Like, not every circle match you're going to need him to kill Warp Wolves. But if they have Wolds, then you know that you can commit him. Like, don't just run him up there for nothing. You don't need him to kill, like, freaking Reeves or whatever.
And, you know, that's actually one thing I sort of sometimes see newer players kind of do is, like, they'll think, like, say, bottom of one. Like, they're not in the same headspace they would be on turn two onwards, where they're just sort of running up their models, like, sort of, like, willy-nilly.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing you have to keep in mind is that, like, and I see this happen when it, like, when I'm running an event and there's, like, a really experienced player and a guy who's, like, not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, doesn't have all the games under his belt as the new guy, the more experienced guy does. And it's, like, round three or sometimes even round four. And you're like, oh, boom, like, top of two, the newer player loses a squire or loses, you know, like, something really important. And it's because, oh, well, I didn't really think this was going to happen to me on turn one. And you just have to, like, always, even when it's bottom of turn one, even sometimes when it's top of turn one, just, like, keep in mind, like, you are threatened at every single point in this game. There's no, like, turn one immunity. If your opponent can draw a bead on your stuff, they'll go for it. So it's just good to keep in mind with, like, arc nodes and really long-range weapons.
Yes, and I think the better your opponent is, the more likely they are to target models like Ragman and the Squire and Arlen Strangeways. Like, you know, more inexperienced players are looking at the chaff. They're looking at all of your Reeves or, you know, all of the Gun Mages or Stormblades or whatever, and they're going to try to kill all of that stuff. Experienced players know that you take apart a list through solos and models that enable other models to do things.
And especially, too, like, if you're playing Gibbs and Ragman, you're probably playing Striker, too. And his is a list that, like, really is strong in the endgame. So if you take out his support early, it hampers what you can do later.
Yep.
Anyway.
Mark, pick us a question.
What does Constance need to lose the nickname Dumpster Blaze?
a great nickname.
It is, actually. That's really sweet. There is one very easy way, and that is you play her in Mercs, and you're actually kind of amazed at how good she is in that faction. Second would be to make Forge Guard Partisan Signar.
Okay.
But since that's unlikely to happen, because I'm just saying Constance Blaze with 3 units of Forge Guard is actually pretty sweet. I think she could benefit from, like, I don't know, like a Spell Piercer, I think, would be enough.
Yeah,
like, you take out Repudiate, give her Spell Piercer. Let's do it.
I don't know.
Yeah, she has a purpose then. At that point,
like, I'm in.
Right now, she's like, look at me, I'm the worst Striker 2 ever.
I will play her if you give her Spell Piercer instead of Repudiate. 100%. I will play her the shit out of her.
Okay.
And maybe she becomes a little more charitable and lets Ragman in bed with her.
Yeah, that's a fluff equals rules issue for sure that I do not like.
Every time I build a list with her, I'm like, this list is pretty good. All I need is a damage buff. Ragman can't come in this list. Worst
yeah, that ever. That one, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to, like, we're gonna succeed on that. But if I were to lobby Privateer Press tomorrow, I would say, give her Spell Piercer, you animals, and she'll be great.
You animals.
You animals. So no, but she'd be really solid with Spell Piercer.
All right.
Like, I think you give her that, and with the Squire too, you get it like 14 inches out. I think you get a really solid. I think you get the support cast, the sort of like mid-range support caster they wanted her to be. And then actually threats like the shit out of enemy models. Like, that's just my opinion, but I think Spellpiercer would make her great.
Mark, for our listeners that aren't in the know, Spellpiercer is what?
Oh, cost 2. Friendly faction models in control get magic weapons and blessed. Which is basically like, because we're a faction that has such terrible upkeep removal, we have no blessed anywhere other than Precursor Knights. I guess that would be a little bit of scorenergy with giving her
Spell Piercer. Tempest Blazers, bro.
Oh, that's right.
Sure.
Blessed Pautens.
And Rifleman.
Damn.
Okay.
Your favorite unit.
Well, they're solo. Calm down.
Right. It's pretty good as a unit. But just give her Spell Piercer, and like they've been kind of handing it out like candy lately. Like, just give her that spell, and you see like the faction changing.
Okay, like Stormblades, Pal 15, blessed, kind of good at that point.
Magic weapons,
sure.
Like, you still probably just take Storm Lances, but still.
Well, okay, fair.
Blast Stormlance says it'd be pretty damn good.
All right.
Be really good.
But
really, I think if you want to mix her up, give her that. Maybe instead of Transference or Radiance of Morrow or what have you.
I hate that spell so fucking much. It's not even funny.
Kind of funny with Harlan Versh, but and Gallant, I guess.
But like, you have to pay one to upkeep it, right? And then pay one to use it. Like, at what point? So it's effectively to use it once costs 2, right? And
right.
You look at positive charge costs 2, it is substantially better, right? For the same cost. Like, it's not even a comparison. Positive charge is abundantly better than Radiance of Morrow. No joke.
Positive charge would probably be broken in like any other faction. Where you have enough in-faction infantry attacks to, like, really break that spell.
That's true.
Like, it is, I agree, it's super good. Like, it's really strong. But it's, like, almost, it might be, like, the best melee buff spell.
In the game.
Well, I mean, there is Battle Lust, but.
Yeah.
It's like, Blood Fury.
Well, right. Okay. I mean, yeah, there are other spells that are similar. Though. Like, Mortality is very similar, right? But Mortality is also, I think it costs 3, and it's a ranged, it's an attack spell.
Yeah.
And it's single target.
Single target. So
you could perfect, like, a lot of times, if you cast it multiple times, like, you can get positive charge to affect, like, the entire front line of a game.
Yeah.
You just have, like, every single one of your melee attacks positively charged.
Or you can
charged.
Just play Jakes, too, and sprint and give it to something else.
Yeah, and then your Sprinting Thorn is giving positive charge to everyone.
Exactly. All right, last question.
An amazing spell. For sure.
Duck asks, why don't Signar players Dark Horse more often? This is not the question that I wanted to ask, but I know Duck will give me hell if I don't ask it. So there you go, Duck. You're a bastard.
Now you won't have to duck away from his retribution.
He plays Kador.
You won't.
Well, Trevi, why don't we Dark Horse more often?
Why don't we Dark Horse? Because our Dark Horses aren't very horse-like. They're like racing emus. You're trying to get like this two-legged flightless bird to race against beautiful stallions. It's just not working too well.
What casters do we have in our faction that we would consider like viable Dark Horses? Like, people don't know what they do. You could take them to a tournament and like surprise people with their tricks and antics and win a couple games because of it. What do we have?
Jakes 2 I think because she was new, did that a lot.
Okay.
But we talk about her so much, I feel like it's going to wear off eventually.
So, like, to me, the list is, like, pretty short. I feel like it's probably, like, Jake's 2, Sturgis, and Nemo 3. Like, they're viable casters that, like, people don't know what they do. Like, Nemo 3's ability to, like, assassinate with electro leaps from, like, freaking 20 inches away, like, on casters that are armor 15, you can kill them top of 2 with electro leaps. Like, that's a viable strategy that's extremely realistic with him. You know, Sturgis, people don't know what he does at all, and, like, buying 16 attacks is good, but he's not really that good. And I think that's probably it. Those three casters? Is that...
You got Kane 1.
Does he still have the range amplifier, the plus 5 inches?
He sure does.
Okay.
He basically just gained abilities. Like, teleport got worse, but he got his magic weapons thingy.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And he got gunfighter. Boo boo.
Yeah. Thank God he doesn't have that stupid sword.
He still has his sword.
Yeah. Not my model. I snapped that sucker off.
I guess.
Anybody else?
Who doesn't love Thunderstrike? And, like, I don't know. But otherwise, like, he's otherwise, like, the same.
Right.
So.
The Field Marshal is cute, but not a game changer. It's
won't be saying that when you're playing as Lilith 3.
Well, I mean, in a Lilith 3 and in a Tuna, it's pretty good. So, anyway. But I think that list is probably very short of, like, viable Dark Horse casters. And I feel like what you're giving up in return for that is quite a bit. Because our... Go ahead.
I've definitely Dark Horsed with Signar in the past. So I just remember in Mark II going to, like, a tournament. An ADR tournament. And it was like, oh, cool. I'll Dark Horse. And it was just like round after round of Veil 2.
Oh.
Granted.
Yeah.
And like that was already a shitty matchup for Signar back then. And then having to play like a faction that, or a caster that was not really optimized for that. And I don't know. I just think like. Casters that end up warping the meta. So if we're talking Mark 3, now we're talking like Una, Wyrmwood, in my opinion, like Oseram or Damiano with the theme list, you just like don't have that luxury, I guess, in Signar, where we have like a couple really specific and strong answers to what's out there.
So I will say this, if you want a Dark Horse, ADR is probably the place to do it. I went to a Masters tournament in September, and I took Maddox, and I took Striker 1, and I looked at the meta, and I said, what are the problems out there that I'm going to see? Madrak, I'm going to see. I'm going to see Wyrmwood. I'm going to see Ossian. And then I built a Striker 1 and Maddox pair with stuff and specialists to be able to handle it, and I feel like you could feasibly Dark Horse there and probably do okay. I guess the question is how competitive do you want to be? What are your expectations at a tournament? Like, if your expectations are to go 5-0 and win the thing, probably don't Dark Horse. But if you're a less experienced player, you could probably pull it off with some degree of success. That's my advice. That's it. So I think that wraps up our very first question and answer episode. You can send questions to our Facebook page. You can either message us or put them on our wall, and we will include them in these episodes or in the beginning of episodes where we actually talk about, like, casters and so on and so forth. So, yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening to The Storm Chamber.
You made it through, brave listener. I'm so proud of you.
You should be.